This summer marks the 50th anniversary of the break-in at the Watergate Hotel that eventually led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon. Watergate not only had profound impacts on how Americans see the government and the press, but it has influenced decades of movies, TV, and books. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Watergate in pop culture on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is NPR senior editor Barry Hardiman. Welcome back, Barry.
Hi.
And also here with us is our pal Vulture TV critic Roxana Haddadi. Welcome back, Roxana.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So time, as you can imagine, does not really permit a full retelling of the history of Watergate, but a refresher would go as follows. The break-in at the national headquarters of the Democratic National Committee on June 17th, 1972, was part of an operation to bug those offices. The burglars were caught, and over a long period of time, reporting from journalists, including Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein at the Washington Post, uncovered connections between the burglary and the White House. There was also evidence of other operations to sabotage and interfere with political enemies. Congressional hearings followed, and during those hearings, it came out that Nixon was in the habit of secretly recording conversations in his own offices. Those tapes were eventually made public, and when Nixon's knowledge of efforts to cover up the whole thing came to light, he resigned in August of 1974. And a number of his associates and staffers faced criminal convictions. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein wrote a blockbuster book called All the President's Men, and then there was a film of the same name in 1976. It was directed by Alan J. Pakula and starred Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein. Other projects about Watergate have continued to come out, right up to Gaslit, a Starz series from this year starring Julia Roberts as Martha Mitchell, the powerful wife of Nixon's Attorney General, John Mitchell, who's played by Sean Penn. I am going to start with you, Barry. Are you a Watergate head?
I am a Watergate head. And partly, I think if you're a journalist, it exists in this kind of rarefied atmosphere as a moment where journalism felt noble.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But that was one where it did. So, yes.
Right. I mean, that's sort of the most famous example, I suppose, of,
I think
you
so.
Know, that journalism kind of gets the story, gets the person, figures out what happened.
Yeah. And I will say, as a because I work in our investigations unit now, and I will say it's also the thing for journalists, which has become the North Star, like, what if I get that story, that kind of a story?
Right.
So, you know, I've never gotten out of into a parking lot without thinking, maybe my source is here, you know.
All right. Roxana, are you a Watergate head?
I think I'm more of a pop culture Watergate head. Like, I think I'm more interested in the legacy of the film and sort of the impact that a story about shadowy government operatives and the havoc they wreaked upon the American people.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of what I gravitate toward.
Yeah.
And it has had such a long legacy on just how we tell these stories narratively and visually. So I think that's what I'm always looking for. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for the parking lot meetup moment. Like what evokes that same sense of mystery and a little bit of subterfuge.
Sure.
And there's so much to talk about in that part of it.
Well, and one of the things I think is interesting is that, you know, I mentioned All the President's Men, but the other one that I watched this weekend that I think is such an interesting example is Dick from 1999, which is Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst playing these 15-year-old girls who get very... It's sort of this wacky comedy that imagines a world in which they were actually responsible for much of what happened in this period of history. They were the ones who taped the door, which is how the burglary was discovered. They were Deep Throat. They were the ones who created the gap in the tapes from Nixon's office. There's a very broad comedy there. And a lot of it is not just a spin on Watergate. It's a spin on All the President's Men. The take on Woodward and Bernstein in that movie, who are played by Will Ferrell and Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall. Will Ferrell less so, but certainly McCullough is playing the Dustin Hoffman Carl Bernstein and is kind of making fun of the hair and the sort of confidence. The newsroom is shot in the same way. And I love the fact that in Dick, they kind of make fun of the iconography that came from all the president's men, which I think is a super fascinating echo. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to say that of all, I think there's no piece of Watergate pop culture that for me still feels right. And I recently rewatched it, and I will tell you, I mean, it's so darling and so Daffy, just absolutely.
It is Daffy.
Daffy, you know? And what I was worried about when I went back is I thought, oh, are these teen girls, are we going to be making fun of them in a way that feels, especially, you know, because right now, like, all we want to do is go back to the 90s and rewrite the history for teenage girls. They actually aren't especially ditzy, even though they are always described as two dits in the word, like that's the premise, but they're actually just totally average. They're sort of a stand-in for the effect, I think, of Watergate on regular people. Like, they start out so sunny and upbeat and very innocent. Like, there's this right. funny moment she's like, they're asking him to pull out of Vietnam. And I can't remember. One of them is like, I just think people would like it better if you stopped the war.
I just think that people would like you better if you stopped the war.
Well, don't worry your pretty little heads, okay? I think we know what we're doing.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah.
Arlene, like, really has her heart broken by Nixon. There's something about that particular one that holds up in a way that feels right for a country that's just been through 4 years of Donald Trump. The criminals are not particularly, you know, deep thinkers. You know, they're inept. Everybody's just sort of nutty. And so there's something about that particular one that's not just sweet, but has a sort of nostalgia for innocence that I, as a person in the year of our Lord 2022, also have that nostalgia.
Well, what I love about the 90s is that it gave us both Dick and the cigarette smoking man on The X-Files, who is like the major villain on that show and is a shadowy conspiracy government figure who, you know, has had his fingers in everything for the last few decades of American history. And The X-Files is also the show that gave us three men who are investigating as a team called the Lone Gunmen. So I think like the 90s were really the time for reassessing Watergate and thinking, what are the extreme ways that we can analyze what happened here?
Yeah.
And I think I love that it takes the form of two blonde, sunny teenage girls, and also the ever nefarious government operative.
Right. Yeah.
And both of those readings apply here. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think we can escape either side of it. I don't think we can escape your government is going to continue to lie to you and take advantage of you. And that's just the nature of power. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get these people who are searching for the truth, and maybe the truth can't be found. That dichotomy is always going to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick, in a lot of ways, is a jumping off from the line in All the President's Men where Deep Throat says, these aren't very bright guys. Things got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Dick is sort of the film that takes Watergate and considers it through that lens, right? If indeed these guys were not very bright and it got out of hand, isn't that a comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a way. And it's one of those, if it weren't so tragic and upsetting, mm-hmm. it would be really funny. The idea that somebody is recording their own crimes.
Downfall, right?
Have either of you seen Gaslit?
I have.
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
I really like Gaslit a lot. And mm-hmm. I am really enjoying it as a project that sort of walks that tragedy comedy line.
Yeah.
On the one hand, these people are mostly pretty buffoonish. You get Patton Oswalt playing Charles Coulson. So you have like this huge ensemble of recognizable, mostly comedic actors mm-hmm. playing these horrible people. But I think it gets sort of the tone of it right, which is to say that it was just a swamp pit in which people were, you know, willingly getting in and being dragged down and not necessarily minding it. And what I really liked is that as much as we often tell the story about Watergate and it's about Woodward and Bernstein, it was interesting to me to tell that story from a completely different perspective, mm-hmm. which is from someone who is somewhat in the inside of it and attempting to raise the alarm and being punished for it. I did not really know the Martha Mitchell story.
Yeah.
And I think Julia Roberts' performance is doing a great job. So it's one of those series that I think is very purposeful and trying to stylistically be like, we're in the 70s, and that can be a little grating. But narratively, I have found it really fascinating and unsettling in terms, again, of how little has seemed to change.
I listened to Slow Burn, which this is based on, that really hooked me because I think that's, like you say, that story of Martha Mitchell, people really didn't know it. And she was such a character. And I also really liked Gaslit. And I actually, I'm glad to hear you liked it too. I couldn't tell if I liked it just because I like the era. I couldn't tell if it was just that this was my jam. But I will say, again, she is sort of this stand-in for the ordinary person experiencing Watergate. There are ways in which it feels more true because you are sort of going through it with this woman who's such a wild character herself. And then just on another level, it's just so good to watch. I love the colors. I loved her hair. I loved the, you know, that sort of that sepia. Like, there's all of these different things. And plus, I actually found myself kind of liking Sean Penn, which I went into this pre-rolling my eyes. And I was kind of into it. You know, it's funny. I hope that people who, you know, watch this who are Julia Roberts fans or whatever, but also go from this and go and listen to all of Slow Burn, because it really is one of those tellings of the story that I think really gives you that feeling that it might have felt like at the time, and oddly comforting.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of bleak and cynical to say, but there is something sort of comforting to me to be told that things were always bad.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I don't know. I guess that's an awful thing to say, but things have been pretty bad for a while. Like, and the 90s, I think, sort of spoke to the conditions that led to the two Bush presidencies.
Absolutely.
Watergate speaks to the conditions that lead to Reagan, literally, because Gaslit covers that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think there is something for me, at least, in this reminder of these things are unfortunately cyclical. And if you focus too much on how bad things were recently, you sort of lose the larger picture of these structures have always existed, and you sort of have to figure out a way to analyze them without just that immediacy. So yeah. Again, something that was sort of depressing.
Right.
It's just that Gaslit is littered with these names that you're going to recognize. Mm-hmm. You're going to recognize Haldeman, Liddy, and you're going to recognize Reagan.
Mm,
so I think it's telling a broader story that sort of considers what happened after Watergate. Watergate ends, right, with that very iconic resignation by typewriter that we see. But I think Gaslit is telling you, okay, well, that part of the story ended, but the Republican Party didn't end. Like, these people's power didn't end. So we can laugh at how buffoonish and inept they are, but they didn't really lose out on much, you know?
Yeah, I think I liked Gaslit when it was about Martha Mitchell, because that story was so fresh to me, and because I too had listened to that season of Slow Burn and been fascinated by that episode. Opinions vary about how much you want to watch this kind of fever dreams of G. Gordon Liddy.
Oh,
I personally got kind of bored in that stuff. It's not what I'm there for. As Roxana mentioned, the other thing that we wanted to talk about was kind of how Watergate has affected, not just Watergate has, but all the President's Men has, and the coverage of Watergate and the visions of journalists have affected kind of what has come after. And the interesting thing to me, you know, I think when you talk about Watergate, people often immediately start talking in terms of culture about the paranoid thrillers of the 1970s, whether you're talking about The Parallax View or 3 Days of the Condor or not just All the President's Men itself, The Conversation with Gene Hackman. There are all these, and they're, you know, they're from a bunch of different directors. And the thing I think is interesting is that a lot of that either predates Watergate, or at least the revelations about Watergate, or it's too close to Watergate for that to be the reason why it happened, or the novel that was written was before Watergate. So it's more to me that Watergate kind of fused with a paranoid thriller that was already developing. And now people think of those as Watergate era movies, even though the influence is not necessarily clear. Roxana, check me on that.
No, I think that's completely right. And I think that, again, speaks to this perspective question. I think a lot of people think Watergate sparked the, you know, looking around in panic sort of feeling of these movies.
Right.
But I think that was the time. I think that was just America in those decades, in the sense that something was not right about what your government was telling you about the war, about the economy, about whatever. And I think that sort of sense fed into these movies. I'm sorry to go back to The X-Files, but I think about this a lot in terms of The X-Files.
Like, oh, it belongs in this conversation, no question.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, The X-Files were mostly during the Clinton years, right? At least they started, I think, in that time period. And I think a lot of people think, like, oh, the Clinton years were very halcyon. Everything was fine. Like, what could have been born out of that? And I think there's always the sense that if you look in the corners, you're going to find something you don't want to see.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these movies, in the 70s at least, were sort of born out of that ideology. A lot of them were guided by Alan Pakula, who also then went on to make The Pelican Brief, and he sort of is a very important figure in this cinematic subgenre. But I think it's more interesting to view All the President's Men as a product of these movies and of this time.
Right.
Rather than the birth of them.
Right. You mentioned the director, Alan Pakula. He made Clute in 1971, which stars Jane Fonda as a sex worker who meets Donald Sutherland, who is a detective trying to solve a missing persons case. And during the opening credits, Clute has a sequence involving somebody listening back to a tape of her with one of her clients. These aren't just paranoid thrillers, they're also surveillance thrillers. And I think when you look at all of these, one of the things that most of them have in common is a fear of people taping your conversations, people listening to you. That's essentially what The Conversation with Gene Hackman is about. And that one is Coppola. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what that movie is about entirely, right? But so are most of these other ones, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the revelations about the FBI and the CIA during the civil rights movement, during the anti-war movement, had not fully come to light yet. We were decades into J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. So I think the fact that Nixon was recording conversations played into this complicated feeling about surveillance, where this was a case where people wound up being, if you were a person who wanted this all to come out, the fact that somebody was secretly recording conversations turned out to be a good thing, mm-hmm. in a way. Mm-hmm. But one of the things also that I said to our producer, Mike Katzeff, over the weekend is that I think as much as these movies, if they are the legacy of a particular historical event, as much as anything, they are the legacy of four huge political assassinations in 5 years, right? If you think about John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., I think it's those political assassinations that in a lot of ways are the most immediate predecessor to these films. You know, the Parallax View is very specifically about, you know, assassinations and whether they are one person or a bigger conspiracy. That's the entirety of the thing. But I think the way that people often think Watergate was a loss of innocence moment, I think those assassinations in a lot of ways were just as much, if not more so, a loss of innocence moment for anyone who was able to retain innocence up until that point.
And I think, too, the combination of that plus the war, right?
Mm-hmm,
which,
of course.
You know, like if you think about, you know, the baby boomers who had grown up on their, you know, on the idea that World War II was, you know, greatest generation, that kind of thing. The combination that something bad is going on, that we're being told is something else, and there's no one coming to save you. Not only that, they are in danger. In preparation for this, I was reading just sort of different things from around the, and I noted that George Lucas started writing Star Wars in 1973. And he has this quote, which may or may not be apocryphal, where he says, you know, it's not that democracy is, you know, wrested away out of someone's hands. It's that it's given. And, you know, all of these movies feel like there's been so much compromise and that all of the people, all of the heroes are being watched and are in danger. It gives you that feeling like you can never get out of this.
Yeah.
You know, there is no one coming for you. There's no one to save you.
Yeah. I want to ask you, Roxana, to talk a little bit about the visual stuff that you were referencing earlier. What do you think about as the visual kind of signatures of the films of this period, these kind of 70s, what we think of as paranoid thrillers and that kind of thing?
Well, I think a lot of what you're getting is you're getting visual perspectives that are clearly from someone's point of view who is doing the watching. The camera becomes its own character in terms of how it is communicating the information to you. There is no sort of objectivity. I'm thinking of in 3 Days of the Condor, like tracing Robert Redford through the crowd and following him. You're getting the sense through the camera movements that the camera is being held by someone who is doing that following.
Yeah.
Or I think of in All the President's Men, again, we keep going back to the parking garage sequences with Deep Throat. But even in the newsroom, the way the camera moves through the newsroom, like between the desks, looking into the all glass of the editor's office, where you can see that they're in there and you can see that they're having a conversation, but you don't know what that conversation is about. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of active participation from the camera and sort of guiding you and not guiding you, taking you up to a certain point and then not letting you into the rest.
Right.
And the conversation, I think, probably does this most beautifully because there is this sequence late in the film where, I guess, spoiler alert for like a 50-year-old movie, but Gene Hackman is sort of convinced that he is now being listened to and he tears apart his apartment and we get these long shots of him doing this destruction. And so we're really there in it with him. So I think that there is this, you know, people love to say the camera comes alive, but the camera does come alive and it sort of is complicit alongside you in trying to figure out what is happening here. But as much as you can't figure it out, neither can the camera.
Yeah.
So I think it becomes this partner with you in that tension. All of these movies do this. And then you do get that in The X-Files. You get that, I think, in Sam Esmail's work because you get it in Mr. Robot. Mm. You know, I think there are current projects that do this also and just sort of feed that immersive, unsettling atmosphere.
Yeah, what I noticed when I went back to particularly the parallax view, I think, there's a sequence near the end in which a kind of an unguided golf cart goes driving through a bunch of tables in a banquet hall. You know, you are seeing it, as you say, Roxana, from far away, from the viewpoint of someone watching this from up in the rafters of the building. And the same thing is done. There's a sequence where Warren Beatty is fighting with somebody and they ultimately wind up sort of getting thrown into the water near a dam. And the water is kind of roaring very, very loudly. And rather than having music or much in the way of other sound effects, you don't hear these guys yelling or arguing or anything. You're fully pulled back and you're seeing from quite a ways away what's going on with these two guys in the water. And all you can hear is the water. Mm-hmm. There's a restraint to it that I think builds what Roxana is talking about, which is that distance. Whereas if you compare it to kind of similarly themed films of like the late 90s, like Enemy of the State, which again is Gene Hackman and Will Smith and this story about a conspiracy and surveillance and kind of stuff like that. But in those, you have the car chase and the building blowing up and the big shootout, which are things that you rarely see. I'm not going to say never, right? 3 Days of the Condor starts with a very bloody shooting. But you don't get those like hyped up action sequences in these early ones. They sit back in that silent. It's more like Michael Clayton.
Yes.
Which is another great movie of this kind.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Is there something we can say, I wonder, about the sound and the lack of sound and the mix of the sound, which, you know, for me, like when I think about even just All the President's Men, which is very much like you're in the newsroom and beep, 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 where the natural sound of the world is somehow terrifying.
I just think this comes back to how movies are made now, right? Like there is sort of this immersive, everything you're seeing on screen is as it was quality. Mm-hmm. And Pacula wanted to tell you that, right? Like he loved these zoom out overhead sequences. I mean, the most iconic shot in All the President's Men in the Library of Congress later on in the Pelican Brief when Julia Roberts averts assassination and we zoom above her and we see this crowd that she's getting lost in. Mm-hmm. Like he was really about zooming out and showing you the totality
or
something like Enemy of the State is Tony Scott. And Tony Scott wanted to overwhelm you with totality.
Such a good point. Right,
so I think it's two different ways to show you paranoia. The one which is like you are a small piece of this and you can very easily get lost. And later on, it's more like I'm going to overload you with these surreal, fantastical images and sounds and you're going to get lost that way. Either way, you're going to become immaterial.
You're going to disappear.
It's
true. It's a difference of approach for sure.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit about the other legacy of All the President's Men that we touched on a bit, which is how it affected the way journalism is portrayed in film and television. And as we've already mentioned, you know, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein are these kind of superhero journalists. I will say my favorite scene in All the President's Men is Dustin Hoffman sitting with Jane Alexander trying to get
so
her
good.
To talk.
Yeah.
Would he have any?
I don't want to say anymore, okay?
I won't be much longer. I wondered if you could just help me a little bit about the money. We hear all kinds of figures.
He just keeps putting her off when she keeps saying, I really don't want to talk anymore. He just keeps finding things to say to her to keep her talking. And those aren't necessarily the parts that have had the most influence, which is too bad. It's more that kind of, like I said, that superhero thing. There's a great thing at the end of Dick, which actually has them like high-fiving everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so
as
good.
As they walk through the newsroom. Barry, what do you think as an investigative journalism person?
Well, I mean, as any kind of journalist, I think, you know, it's really hard not to have been affected in one way, which is look at these heroes, which, you know, was how I felt, obviously, like, you know, in the 90s, the early 2000s. And like, and now, you know, we look at that and we're like, look at those two white men who are able to do this kind of reporting and were continued to be given the kind of leeway that no woman or person of color would have been given. You know, I mean, so now we do look back at that. However, right. I would be lying if I didn't say that, like, everybody wants that kind of story. I think, though, in, again, and I'm going to come back to in the years since Donald Trump became president, the idea of what journalism can do feels somewhat diminished. And people do think, I think quite a lot, that journalism was the thing that brought Nixon to his knees. And no, there was, it was also a kind of will of the people. It was a monoculture. So, you know, I mean, those are things that, you know, still affect me. I think about, you know, wouldn't it be great, like I said, to get that kind of a source. But I do also wonder and worry about, you know, how much effect it has.
I think that a legacy, too, is movies sort of like The Report, which was from Scott Burns and Steven Soderbergh. And again, to go before Trump, it is about the CIA enhanced interrogation program. And so I think of that movie, too, where it is, again, sort of like All the President's Men. It is very meticulously crafted. It is well acted. It takes you into the investigation and it lays it all out for you. And that movie sort of made a ripple when it came out and nothing else really happened.
Yeah.
So I think it's that we live in such a fragmented reality now that I think there is no universal agreed upon version of events. And I think that's been happening for a couple of presidencies now. So I think it's also the legacy is that we do still get these movies that are very, I think, intentional and deliberate in what they're attempting to achieve and the lesson that they're trying to give you, right? But I don't think that that captured audience is still there.
Right. Well, and I think the one fantasy in journalism movies like All the President's Men and other ones.
The Post,
Spotlight. One fantasy is journalists are heroes, that sort of thing. The other fantasy is we could solve our problems if people knew what was happening. Right. So that's where you get this idea that, you know, once this all came out, once the reporting about Watergate happened, people responded. They said, well, we can't have this. And there was pressure and he resigned. I think the question that people ask a lot of times about Watergate now is like, look, you could put that reporting out now and it probably wouldn't matter very much. All right. Well, tell us what are your favorite Watergate portrayals in culture. Find us at Facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Barry Hardiman, Roxana Haddadi, thanks to you both for being here. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, sign up for our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. This episode was produced by Mike Katziff and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. I'm Linda Holmes, and we will see you all tomorrow.